There is more than one way that you can be successful in your journey, whether it's real estate or it's personally or other businesses. There's more than one way that you can get to your destination. So yes, making sure you have alternate routes, alternate options, making sure you understand when I've gone as far as I can go on my own, maybe I need to pivot to a partnership. You can do that in the middle of a deal because you're the driver. You're the creator. You're the designer.
Welcome to the Andrea Engstrom Show for Bold Women in Business. We are passionate about helping you break through to your next level of abundance, success, and freedom so that you can create the life you desire and inspire others to do the same. I'm your host, Andrea Engstrom, and I'm here today with my beautiful co-host, Brenda Stroud. Hey, Brenda.
Hey, girl. Hey, I'm so glad to be here with you today. I can't wait to get into our topic.
Yeah, this is a good one. And this is one that I think you are the queen of this. And I'm so excited for you to be able to share some stories and some of the lessons learned along the way. Yeah. Today, we are going to talk about the art of the pivot.
Oh, my goodness.
And how to shift your strategy when things don't go as planned, which all of us know they rarely go as planned.
That's true.
Yeah. And so let's talk about that. Cause I think one of our strengths and where for some of us, where our confidence comes from is ability to navigate hard things, to just have the confidence to trust yourself that whatever happens, you're going to be able to figure out a way to pivot. Yeah. Right? That whatever happens, we're going to be able to handle it. And part of that comes from experience. And so that's something that we develop over time. So Brenda, let's talk about this. How has this been important in your life and in your business, especially over the past few years?
Well, I think, first of all, I apply it in my everyday life. You know, I think, you know, many of our guests that we've spoken to in the past have talked about the change that occurred in their life during COVID.
Yeah.
You know, that's when some people decided to, you know, their W-2s, something happened to their W-2, either it's shut down or the job was eliminated or whatever the reasons for it. But then it opened the door to doing the thing they always wanted to do, which is become an entrepreneur. So it's funny how those two things come together and it creates an opportunity for you to finally make time to do the things that you know, always wanted to do, always be a full-time real estate investor, always wanted to start your own business. So that is a huge example of the pivot. Nobody knew that that's what we were going to be dealing with, you know, in 2020. And nobody realized that, you know, coming out of it, they would have a whole new business.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that was a prime example of having to learning how to do, to be ready for the pivot. Now, I didn't know at the time that that's actually what I was doing, was pivoting. I thought I was just like, oh, okay, well, let me just do this. But as time went on, I was able to kind of give it in my mind a description. I call it the pivot, being ready to pivot. So I was able to pivot during that season from one business that was completely shut down to a new business, which was real estate investing, and actually be able to use that as a positive and a great place to launch. It's almost like a relaunching.
Yes.
Of whether it's an idea or business or whatever the case may be. So, you know, so in life, I'm always allowing myself or giving myself room to change my mind or to be ready to pivot. So then I began to apply that concept as I got into real estate investing full time and understanding how, you know, how it is to find a deal and then go through with whatever that exit strategy is. And then I started to understand after a couple of exit strategies did not go the way that I expected it to go, that it was very important for me to apply that same concept to the actual deal. You know, so I go in, I'll analyze the deal, I'll come up with an exit strategy, but now I come up with multiple A, B, and C other exit strategies just in case the market shifts while you're doing your rehab, just in case that the midterm rentals, not, you know, that area may dry up. You may have to pivot from a flip to a buy and hold.
Yes.
From a traditional BRRRR buy and hold to a student housing. If you miss the timeline, you might then have to go to short-term rental. So you always want to be ready to pivot so that you don't feel like, because my first strategy didn't work, that all of a sudden I did something wrong. No, right. You just got to be ready to pivot to plan B, C, and D, or whatever, however you want to do it. Give yourself permission to change your mind, but mm-hmm. you also want to be prepared for what else you could do.
Yes. Yes. There's always, you know, going to be unexpected.
Yeah.
And things that are outside our control, and we can't control the economy. We can't control a worldwide pandemic.
Yes.
We can't control a death in the family. We can't control when a deal falls through and someone contract doesn't do what delays. They said.
Yeah.
When the contractor does delays or falls apart or something happens with it. We can't control other people. We can't control the environment or our economy or natural disasters, but we can control our response.
Yes.
And to not stay stuck in that moment. And I think when people talk about being stuck, it is, that can be a long-term situation or it can be a very short-term feeling.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, because we control how we are going to show up for that moment.
Absolutely. And I think also how you look at that, I call it a bump in the road or, yeah. Or whether or not you actually feel stuck. You know, realizing that, okay, my initial plan is not going to work. Now I need to be able to move over to another plan does not necessarily mean you're stuck, but you got to be open to the idea that you have more ideas in your mind. You don't have to have a narrow focus. You can widen your thought process. Now being stuck is something sometimes can be something a little different because it could be tapping into a part of yourself that kind of shuts down when you don't know what you're going to do next. If that makes sense, or if because you're such a narrow thinker, you're not thinking when that one plan that you had in place is not working. Now you don't, because you haven't thought about a plan B, C, or D. Now you find yourself standing still and asking and questioning, am I doing the right thing? So yes. I think that's very important for you to go in and understand there is more than one way that you can be successful in your journey, whether it's real estate or it's personally or other businesses. There's more than one way that you can get to your destination. So yes. Making sure you have alternate routes, alternate options, making sure you understand when I've gone as far as I can go on my own, maybe I need to pivot to a partnership. You can do that in the middle of a deal. Mm-hmm. Okay, because you're the driver. You're the creator. You're the designer. So you want to think about it from that standpoint to be open to the idea that, okay, what I'm saying now is is my first thought, but I'm open to I'm still receiving other ideas. I'm still collecting data. Even once the train leaves the station, there's nothing saying you can't continue to collect data.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I think so many times it's our language that is limiting. It's that when we hit I love that you call it a bump in the road. When we hit a bump in the road, some people interpret that bump in the road instead of a bump, it is a canyon that they have fallen into and now they are stuck and they cannot get out, and they make a mountain out of a molehill.
Yeah.
And instead of navigating it as a bump, they are feeling like they're laying in the bottom of a pit and I can't get out.
Right. Quicksand.
Yeah. Quicksand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I think also making sure that you surround yourself with people that you can call on and have that brainstorming session.
Yes.
You know, I think that's important to be able to be open enough and honest enough, and as well as have certain people around you that you can say, hey, look, this is what I have. Do you have any ideas? Let's talk about it. Let's brainstorm about it. You know, what have you tried in the past? And that can open the door for other opportunities for you to consider other options to get in. You're still shooting for the same destination.
Yes.
But you can have other options and other ways of getting there. So I definitely believe that, you know, in order for you to be ready to pivot, you also got to have certain tools and certain things in place. And the one thing that Andrea mentioned is your mindset. It's the way you think about it, is the verbiage that you use and what you say to yourself as well. That's a major part of it. So, you know, I have gone into several transactions with one exit strategy. The very first flip I had that I was going to, actually, it was a flip. And ultimately, in the end, I wanted to sell the property, take the capital and go do something else with it. Well, I wasn't able to sell it. This is the first time I had ran into this, because majority of my portfolio are buy and holds. Mm-hmm. And I was investing in an area. At some point, I realized that I had to create my own comps because I just didn't have comps available in the area. And I was able to kind of have, again, a good understanding of that market. Everything that went on the market for sale was sold as is. It wasn't renovated or any of that. And that suppresses the value in an area if you're not selling either new builds or you're not selling renovated properties. So I grew to understand that. Mm-hmm. So I had a property and my plan was I was going to renovate this property and I was going to flip it. It became, I bought it for like $49,000 or something like that. I'm in Tuskegee, so don't, 49 is common in Tuskegee.
You know, people are like, what? $49,000. That might as well be $49. That's so cheap.
Right. I bought it for like $49. I did the value add. I did the whole rehab. By the time I was finished with it, it appraised for $280,000. Okay.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Can we all just take a moment and appreciate what you just said? That's incredible.
Yes. Yes. It was $280,000. And I had it on the market for like $275,000. The highest offer I got at that time was $220,000. And I was like, no, I'm going to say no to that. I'm not going to leave that kind of money on the table. And there was multiple reasons for that. But at that time, no was my response to $220,000 when I was trying to sell it for $275,000. Okay. So I decided I did such a nice job with this property. I really love what I did with this property. And probably looking back on it, I probably overimproved it.
Okay. That's okay. Fair.
I probably did. But I decided to convert it to I didn't sell it. I took it off the market and I converted it to my short-term rental. Yes. It's a really nice house. The mayor calls it the best short-term rental in the area, in Tuskegee. It's a really nice property and it's profitable, for me right now. And that was the best decision for me because at the time I thought I really needed it, to sell it for the capital, but because I turned down the $220,000, clearly I didn't need it for the capital. So mm-hmm. I was willing to do the longer investment into the property and get the return, as down the road, in other words.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, you can flip it and get paid once or you can hold it and get paid monthly. I decided to hold it and get paid monthly. Mm-hmm. And that for me made it possible for me to do other things as well as have a short-term rental. At one point had two short-term rentals in Tuskegee. Right now I just have one, which is that same one. Mm-hmm. Very popular. So I think it was a good fit for us, but it was so early in my career that that's kind of when I learned that I have to be ready for the pivot.
Yes. That's so good. Yeah, that's so good. And I think, I also want to acknowledge, Tuskegee, Alabama is not a typical community where you would expect to find a short-term rental or that someone would say, oh, this is the perfect place for me to put an Airbnb, right? Yeah. Yeah. And so some people I think also struggle with the fixed thinking, where they will tell themselves, well, that's not possible, or that's going to fail. And it's important to look at all of our information, gather data, do the research, mm-hmm. but be willing to try things that are not if plan A didn't work out, then let's explore our options and not just assume something is going to not work because, maybe nobody else is doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And and for me, it was important for me to not look at it as a failure.
Right.
Just because plan A didn't work doesn't mean I failed.
Yes.
That's not the way I look at it. Because as I was collecting my data and doing more research, I realized they didn't really have a lot of nice Airbnbs at that time. This was a few years ago. At that time in Tuskegee. Tuskegee is a college town.
Yeah.
Okay. Tuskegee also, the population is an older population. Mm-hmm. And it's and I describe it as an underserved community, mainly because they're not getting the same financial investments as some of the other areas are getting. Mm-hmm. The federal dollars, the state dollars, you name it. And because the population is older, you don't have, most communities, what's going to make a community successful is the fact that you have a combination of young families and younger people along with the older population. Well, you don't really have that. And that's what we're trying to change in Tuskegee. The population is less than 10,000 people.
Right.
So wanted to provide quality housing, a quality short-term rental was one of my goals. And that was what I leaned into when I decided to convert this particular property to a short-term rental. But as time went on, like I said, because of the fact that I grew to understand the dynamics of the area that I was investing in, that I did have to, you know, be ready to pivot. And even today, I'll analyze a property when I buy it. I might come up with an exit strategy. I'm continue to analyze it as I work through the rehab. When I'm done and I complete the value add, I analyze it again to make sure my initial strategy is still the best strategy.
Yes.
And then I go from there. I put it on the market. If it doesn't move, and I'm not very patient about how I'm not very patient when I put it on the market. I mean, I want to see it. I'll give it about 30 to 45 days. If not, I'm moving on to plan B.
Yeah. Because
I think it's important that if I work, everything I own needs to work, including my properties. So you can't be sitting there waiting for no buyer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I need a renter in there. I need to do something, you know, to get that thing generating that some cash flow. But that's for me. That's what works for me in the area in which I invest in. So it was important for me to invest in that thought process of being ready to pivot.
Yeah.
And not see that as, you know, something negative that some people may, you know, describe when plan A doesn't work, then I failed or, you know, something, you know, but no, I think it's important to be ready to pivot in all areas of your life, not just in business.
Yeah. Amen to that. Yeah. You know, when we did this triplex renovation in Colorado, over the last few years, and we were super excited about it. We ran the numbers. It was going to be awesome. Everything was like way better than good on paper. Right. Yeah. And then we ran into contractor issues and we had a lien filed on the I mean, we lost a bunch of money. Like we had to come up with more money to finish the project than we expected to. It was like all the, and it took way longer, you know, it's like all these things stack up that we said, okay, what are we going to do? We've got to come up with like a plan B on how we're going to finish it. Cause the money was gone, you know, and it was, and we could sit there and we can blame other people and we can, you know, fuss about it and cry about it. But the reality is we're responsible to figure out how to finish that property. Right. And so for me, that like, when I kind of saw the writing on the wall, that project was going in that direction, and I said, we're going to have to come up with a significant amount of money. And this is going to be a hard one to lend on because it's going to take us past that lendability margin. Cause we're going to, I don't know who's going to want to lend on this. But for me, I looked at that and I said, we went into that project without the level of reserves that we should have for the level of project. It was, you know, multi-million dollar project. And I said, you know what? I think this, for me, this is the writing on the wall. And it took us getting into that position for me to say, I have to launch my own coaching program. It is time. Mm-hmm. I have to significantly increase our income in other areas so that we create the buffer that we need, or we are able to cash flow the remaining renovations costs on this project. And over that, you know, over that next several months, we were able to cash flow, you know, over $100,000 of additional repairs because of that moment of pivot. And it took something bad happening to light a fire under my butt to do the thing that I had wanted to do or had talked about doing and was really in my heart and I felt called to do. But it took me being in that challenging situation to actually do the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to be willing to pivot. And then of course we tried to list it and sell it. It didn't sell. The market was tanking. We're in a community of 5,000 people where this is located and nothing was selling. Nothing was moving. We weren't even getting showings. And so we had to put a renter in it. And that was not the plan. That was not the plan. But because we had set ourselves up in such a way with changing our cash flow situation, and even as a rental, it doesn't quite cash flow, but we're holding on to it for the appreciation because we're waiting for the market to come back just a little bit in that market. But we give ourselves options when we are willing to think outside of that box. And I don't want my other businesses to pay for other businesses, but sometimes we get in a situation in our life where we've got to create margin and get through a period of time to be able to get back to where things need to be. But I'm so grateful for the challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it kicks our butts to do a hard thing and leads us to do the thing that we've been
Hesitating. Yeah. I remember us having conversations about that when you guys started, you know, realizing like we got to explore other options.
Yeah.
And you know, so I remember us talking about it, and I've even found myself in situations, you know, with the property here in Marietta where I ran into the permitting issues.
Yes.
You know, and I'm just going to call it that for now, the permitting issues. And a lot of times it is things that's out of your control.
Right.
You know, it's not, you can't control the market shifting. You can't control, you know, people's perception in the permitting office or whatever the case may be, but you got to be, you know, willing to see it for what it is and then just dig deeper, you know, and come up with, because I know for me, when I have, you know, things that I got to kind of sort through and I allow myself the opportunity to kind of center down and calm down, give yourself some room. And also have conversations with people who also have the similar mindset or a business mindset to kind of give me options. I'm able to pull all of that together and come up with my next couple of moves.
Yes.
As compared to letting that be an obstacle, letting that be something that will cause me to, you know, say, okay, I'm just going to throw it all up in the air and just going to let it all go. I'm just not that person. So I think sometimes those lessons and those bumps in the road, as I like to call them, is what's going to benefit you down the road, because you know, it's not going to be very many things that come my way that I can't find a solution to, you know, whether it be more strategic on how I use my funding and my resources. There are times if I like now I have a property that I've just recently finished renovating. I'm in the process of finishing it, wrapping it up now. This is getting appraised this weekend. And when I bought it, it was supposed to be a flip. Now I'm just wrapping it up now, and I'm nearing the end of my, of the loan that I have on it. So my PMLs, I want to make sure my PMLs get paid back, you know, and don't have to wait. I don't know how long it's going to take to sell for me to put it on the market. So now I've decided, okay, well, I'm going to one of two things. I'm either going to go ahead and do a DSCR loan, for the 30 years with a no prepayment penalty, or I'm going to do a bridge loan. Okay, so I compared the two. If I did the DSCR loan with no prepayment penalty, and I did the bridge, which typically a bridge is up to 2 years, bridge loan, it was right around the same amount of money.
Huh.
So I decided I'm going to do the DSCR loan with 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, I could still sell it. The reason that for the no prepayment penalty is because I want to be able to sell it without a penalty.
Right.
At any given point. So I decided to go with the DSCR loan with no prepayment penalty. I can pay my PML off right, you know, on the spot. So they're not in the background waiting for their money. And I can either put it on the market, give it some time to sell, or I can put a renter in it and wait for the market to turn a little further down the road and then sell it with no penalty.
Perfect.
So yes. Yeah. So in other words, I still have options. I could still sell it. I don't have my PMLs waiting in the background, waiting for me to sell this property. They've gotten their money back, able to move on to do other things. And I'm now in a 30-year loan that will do what I needed to do, regardless of what I do moving forward. If I want to put a long-term renter in it, if I want to do a student housing, if I want to do for one season or whatever the case may be, I can still do that and have a 30-year loan on it without it. And I'm getting a cash out refi.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I'm still getting, I can, and the other option also that became an option as you know, as I was trying to explore, what can I do? I can do owner financing. I can sell it with an owner financing. I got the cash out refi because I bought this house of $50,000. I probably got another $30,000 in it on rehab. So my PML is an $80,000 loan on it. Yeah. I always do appraisals on my property when a pre-purchase appraisal. So I already know the ARV is $190,000. I'm in it for 80.
Yeah.
So I can do the cash out refi.
Yeah.
On top of that, position it where I can do owner financing. So I got the money from the cash out refi. If I do the owner financing, whether it's 10% or 20% down, there's more money coming to me then. And now I'm, you know, I've turned it over to whoever, you know, wants to buy it. I'm not responsible for the taxes. I'm not responsible for the insurance. I'm not responsible for maintenance.
Yep. Plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D. Go. Love it.
Yes. So being able to kind of look at it that way makes it possible for me to turn it into a win-win situation, even if I'm walking, I'm backing up really close to my maturity date, because ultimately my goal is that my PMLs get paid back. I'll take an L before I let my PML take an L.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So that strategy in and of itself, actually, when I sat down, I thought about them. That's a pretty good strategy, girl. That's the moneymaker right there.
No, that's good. Yeah. This is really good.
Yeah.
No, and I think the lesson to learn from that also is like to if we can look at things from all sides, like take a beat, take a breath, and look big picture. When you know more strategies, you're able to have a bigger picture that you can look at and know what could be possible other scenarios. And I think that's part of what makes you so great as a coach too, Brenda, is that you have experience in so many different strategies and having to pivot. And now you have a great perspective on how to spot that in advance or come up with like alternate scenarios. I think one of the challenges that sometimes we get into or that we see, especially is in, you know, much higher priced properties that can be, and when we don't, if somebody's getting into a much higher price deal and they don't have the reserves to have the flexibility, we make decisions very differently when everything feels like we're in scarcity, or in loss or something like that. And we're kind of, we start to feel that sort of freak out.
Yeah.
And so to just recognize, like, it's not always a good deal to do everything with no money in the bank, like to give yourself that buffer, but also to recognize that when you're doing a bigger deal, like there are ways to pivot. There are situations that you can navigate that differently and work it out, but you're not staying as flexible as when you do deals that are more in your, not in your comfort zone, but more in your affordability, where they could meet the 1% rule, or they could be, you know, if they got a 50% occupancy Airbnb kind of situation, like we're still going to be okay. Right.
Yeah. You do have to think ahead. You do have to think ahead, and you're absolutely right. The more money you spend, sometimes that could limit your options or how many pivots you can make. Because of just the price point, like what I have with the house in Marietta. That house is, you know, we paid $360 or $70 for it. The ARV is $750. Yeah. We're in it for like $520 right now. You know, so and realistically, it could be a duplex. I'm choosing not to have it zoned as a duplex, but there's 3 bedrooms, 3.5 baths upstairs. I'm sorry, 4 bedrooms, 3.5 baths upstairs, and 4 bedrooms, 2 baths downstairs because I finished the basement.
That's a whopper.
Yeah, it is a whopper. And it's definitely something. And I think by holding it is where I would maximize my return. But I have to get to that point because of the delays as a result of the permitting department. It kind of ate away at my carrying costs. My carrying costs ate away at my profit. So now I'm just trying to get to that point because initially I was going to house hack it. But because of the delays, I don't think it's going to be possible to house hack it. But I could come up with some other ways of doing it. It might be perfect for pad split, which I haven't done yet. That's one of the strategies I haven't done yet. It may be perfect for something like that. But I'm keeping an open mind. I'm staying positive about where I'm going with it. And I think that's the key also. Stay positive. You know, don't be hard on yourself when you don't have to be.
Yes.
You know, even if it seems like you have no options, 9 times out of 10, you probably do have another option. You got to move the rock and look under the dirt. There's one more option underneath it. You know, you just got to look for it.
Yeah. And part of knowing how to look for it is knowing who to call, who are the, you know, who are the money people, who are the experienced other sisters in my corner.
Yeah.
Like who are those people that you can call, and having intentionally cultivated your circle of people.
Absolutely.
So that you have someone to call on in that situation.
Yeah. You got to make sure you're sitting at the right table.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
You know, and everybody that's at your table, you know, maybe everybody was at your table last month or last year, may not be the same people at your table now, and that's okay.
That's right.
You know, you got to be okay, you know, okay with that. So just, you know, like I said, a big part of it is being open. Don't be hard on yourself. Don't let society dictate what success looks like for you. You know, you create your own recipe.
That's right.
Of what works for you and where you are today, not where you were yesterday or where your grandparents were. No, you know, you want to create something that's uniquely yours and that will work for you in your investment journey and take you where you need to go. I don't think there's any reasons for us to find ourselves in a situation where you have to let a house go. or were you, you know, or falling into foreclosure, you know, which I know some ladies have struggled with, or whatever that thing is. In my mind, it's like, okay, well, that means you maybe you didn't explore all the options you needed to explore early enough so you could prevent that. Because sometimes people wait to the very, 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 very last minute to ask for help. You know, when realistically they have no other options. But you want to, you know, I would explore that very early on, even when your deal is healthy. I still would have that conversation very early on. And if you start in a sense that's, you know, something's not sitting well with me, you got to trust your intuition. I think sometimes we as women deny that our intuition. You can kind of see the writing on the walls that it's time for me to pivot. It's time for me to entertain the idea of pivoting.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I love it. Well, I'm such a fan of, the concept of forging your own path. You said build, make your own recipe a minute ago, but like we get to choose what success looks like for us. That's get to make decisions about where we live, what we drive, what, you know, sometimes I think people feel like they're in a pit or they're stuck and they get in a financial bind and they think they still have to drive an $80,000 car.
Right.
And they're like, I'm stuck. And I'm like, girl, sell your dang car.
Right.
Like, move in with your parents. Like, like we're not stuck. We always got options. We always get to choose. We always can figure out a way. And I think we sometimes we'll worry about what other people think.
Yeah.
When we're trying to forge our own path, when we're trying to create something. And so there's, I think also this dose of humility that is a growth thing for a lot of us. It's like, because our sometimes our biggest fear is that I'm going to say I'm going to do something and then it's not going to work out and then everybody's going to think I'm a failure.
Right.
And like I'm like I don't know about you but I'm at a place in my life where I'm done caring what other people think of me when it comes to like what my life has to look like.
Right.
And so just like to get to a place where you can just let go of having to look a certain way to other people or that, you know, and I do want to be a person of integrity. Don't mishear that, but like, I want to be someone who does what I say I will do. But if I say I am going to do something and then things change in circumstances, it is okay to pivot. It is okay to change what you say your goal is. It is okay to take a different path when you go through the experience and recognize that it is not what you thought that it would be, or it is not working out how you had planned.
Right.
Like having the humility to say, hey, that's not working exactly how I thought it would, but I'm going to be creative and to spin it in your positive and say, let's get creative. Who do I need to call to help me figure this thing out and just make it work. And we're the people who figure it out.
I think there's a difference between somebody not showing up at all and then someone changing their path to get to the destination. Especially when you're talking about integrity, I think there is a difference, you know, and not, you know, and someone who's going to make that tough phone call to say, hey, it's not going to look the way we needed to look, but I'm still going to do X, Y, and Z about, you know, whatever that looks like. So I think we have to be mindful of that, you know, as well as I think the one thing that you and I, one of the many things that you and I have in common is that not so much we don't care what other people think, we trust ourselves. You know what I mean?
Amen.
We trust ourselves. Now that's, again, we're breaking away from what society says we should do things. We understand that. And we're okay with, it doesn't have to look like happiness or success is a little white house with the picket fence and with the, you know, the dog and want to have kids or whatever, you know, society says that it is. It can be something totally different for us and it still be a successful story for each of us.
Yeah.
And without concern about what other people think.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so trusting yourself is key. Trusting that you'll be able to, you know, that you'll be able to find a way to get to your destination, even if it's a, you know, up the hill and down in the valley and around the corner, we're still okay with getting there as compared to standing on the side of the street waiting for the bus to come and you're not even standing at the bus stop.
That's right. That's right. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. And I know that there's people that needed to hear that today. Yeah. So thank you for saying that out loud.
Yeah.
Brenda, what is something that we can challenge our listeners to do this week to take bold action?
I would say strip off what other people want you to do and start thinking about what you really, really want to do. And I say this because I remember when I was going through my divorce back in 2011, when my husband came to me and said he didn't want to be married anymore. And I found myself really, really upset because, you know, I never thought I was going to get divorced. And I found myself on the floor crying about it. And I asked myself this question, what do you want? I never asked myself that question up to that point. My entire adult life, I was a parent, you know, then I got married. So I was caring for my son and then I was caring for my husband, never really taking the time out to care for myself. So as I, you know, found myself, you know, sitting on the floor, staring at this tan carpet, crying, and I did not have an answer to that question, that was probably more upsetting than even the losing the marriage, is that I never took the time to figure out, what do you want, Brenda? Not what's best for your son, not what's best for your husband, not what's best for your coworkers, but what's best for you. In that moment, I decided that that question was going to be the most important question in my life. What's best for me? Mm-hmm. So I say to you to seek that answer to that question for yourself. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel ashamed about putting yourself before your husband, before your children, because you're no good to them if you're not good to yourself. So I say, think about yourself in this moment. What's good for you? And start moving in, you know, in that fashion, because you are important. You are valuable. You are your most valuable asset.
Amen. I love it. I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, well, sisters, if you want to gain more clarity in your life and your business, I want to invite you to join me for a free workshop for women entrepreneurs on how to increase your income, live your best life, and inspire others to do the same. You can register for free over at AndreaEngstrom.com. If something on my show today with Brenda resonated with you, would you just let us know? Give us a review on the podcast. And if you think of a sister who needed to hear what we talked about today, please share this episode with them. And you can join my Facebook group, Bold Women in Business Sisterhood, where I share strategies for building a business in the life that you deserve. Thank you again to my co-host, Brenda Stroud. You are amazing. Thanks for dropping wisdom. Yes. Wisdom bombs dropped today. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, till next time, I'm Andrea Engstrom, and we are your sisters in business, encouraging you to take action on your dreams. Show up to your life with power and authenticity. Be bold, be tenacious, and make it happen.
Bye. Today.